Hey, everybody. Today's episode of Shoppernomics is brought to you by Decision Breakers, experts in behavior-based shopper strategy, insights, and activation. Visit www.decisionbreakers.com to learn more and see how they can help you win the war in store. Welcome to Shoppernomics, the podcast for marketing and insight professionals who want to stay current on the latest understanding of consumer behavior and decision-making. My name is Phil McGee, and today's guest is Jeff Inman, the Albert Wesley Fry Professor of Marketing at the University of Pittsburgh. And his interests include consumer decision-making, shopper marketing, and eating behaviors. Jeff's work has appeared in scholarly journals such as the Journal of Consumer Research, Journal of Marketing Research, Marketing Science, and Journal of Marketing. Before entering academia, he worked at General Motors as a production supervisor and Texas Instruments as a semiconductor distribution manager. Jeff and his colleagues recently published a paper titled From Browsing to Buying and Beyond, the Needs Adaptive Shopper Journey Model. And I wanted to speak with Jeff about it because it makes a great contribution to our thinking about consumer journeys and I believe has broad application for consumer goods marketers. So Jeff, welcome to Shoppernomics.
Hey, Phil. Glad to be here. My pleasure.
Terrific. Hey, Jeff, would you mind building on my introduction and tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Oh, sure. Well, as you mentioned, in my prior life before academia, I worked at Texas Instruments down in Dallas and at General Motors in Indianapolis, backgrounds in engineering. And then I got an MBA and PhD from University of Texas. And then I've been on the faculties at University of Southern California and the University of Wisconsin, and now at Pitt. My research has always been sort of at the nexus of secondary data with experiments, and so now it seems like the world has drifted to that spot, and so there you're seeing a lot more kind of behavioral economics sort of work with field studies and supplemented with either lab studies or secondary data. So my research has been mostly focused, almost exclusively focused, I guess I would say, on consumer decision-making, typically at the point of purchase. A lot of my research has been in-store decision-making sorts of behavior, which led us to this project.
And I've read a lot of your work, and it's really seminal and just makes wonderful contributions to how we think about shoppers. I also understand there's a rumor that you've taken over as the editor-in-chief for the Journal of Consumer Research. Is that right?
That is correct. So we started, we have a team of four of us, and I'm the editor-in-chief, and we started our term on January 1st. So we're 19 days in now, and we've already received about 40 manuscripts. So at that rate, we're going to be tracking well over 700, 800 manuscripts this year.
Wow. Well, first of all, congratulations. That really is an honor. But also a great example. Thanks. Of be careful of what you wish for.
That's right. That's true.
Now you and I met years ago when we collaborated on a path to purchase study. You recall we presented it at the Institute for International Research's Shopper Insights in Action Conference, and at the Marketing Science Institute's Retail Conference. So, obviously you are no stranger to consumer journeys. Just curious, what's the background for this paper?
That's a great question. Like you said, this is very in line with and consistent with my prior research stream in general. But more specifically, I also, on the teaching side, I've taught a class over the years that's kind of, evolved. But, it started around with scanner data, then it evolved to category management. And then shopper marketing, and now it's focused more primarily on shopper analytics. And so, as part of that course, I taught the students about the various decision making models that are out there. Mm-hmm. And as in the late early 2000s, McKinsey came out with their consumer decision journey model. And so we talk about that in the class and some of the pros and the cons. Mm-hmm. And And then fast forward to 2016, there was a think tank sort of a conference that took place up in Canada. And Leonard Lee, who's on the faculty at the National University of Singapore, and I put together a group of leading academics, thought leaders in this general area of decision making to talk about developing a shopper decision journey model that kind of started from base principles and built up to a model that would be a little more flexible,
yeah,
and be based on core principles in psychology and economics compared to some of the other models that were out there, like the funnel model and the McKinsey decision journey.
Yeah, from a practitioner standpoint, I found those models a bit, first of all, a bit too high level, number one, and number two, they really were operating on an assumption of a one-size-fits-all, that all shopper journeys, yes, basically follow the linear process, and you just need to kind of plug and play for your category. And you guys, you mentioned your principles before. I think one of your principles was that that's not the case, that these journeys often are not. One of your journeys, you know, is described as linear, but for the most part, most of them are not that way. Why don't you talk about some of those principles?
Well, the core of the model is that shopper journey model is that the specific steps or stages that the shopper goes through in a particular journey is adaptive, and hence the name adaptive, based on the needs that are driving that trip, mm-hmm, or that particular journey.
Yeah.
And so we started with kind of the core notion that the shopper's looking to maximize their own utility,
mm-hmm,
the ultimate goal, if you will. And then around that, there's 3-day session being locked in a room. We said, okay, now what are some of these steps that people would go through? What are some of the needs that people would go through? And so we have a figure in the paper that really, I think, does a good job of bringing it all together. And it's got the different steps that people might go through. So we like those steps. We're not necessarily arguing that we think that actually it's not the case that every shopper goes through every step on every trip.
Right.
And I think McKinsey's model does adapt to that a little bit because they have that inside loop where you kind of just do the habitual purchase loop.
Right.
But we kind of had a epiphany during this session that somebody said, you know what? How can we kind of capture that general idea that people go through different steps through based on different types of trips and needs? And we came up with this idea of an archetype journeys.
Hmm.
And so we pursued that, and then we ultimately ended up following that up with some data collection to kind of get a sense of how valid are these archetypes. And went out and surveyed some consumers and developed a perceptual map and captures about 75% of the variance. And we ended up with 12 different archetypes.
Okay,
and
so
your readers want to hear about all those, but they vary a lot.
Yeah, so we'll talk about a couple of those. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jeff. But I want to step back just for a minute. So it sounds like the 12 archetypes are based off of the knowledge of those that were in that session. You know, kind of based off of the aggregate of prior research and knowledge going into it. In other words, these archetypes weren't necessarily derived from a journey segmentation algorithm. They were more inferred from prior research. Is that accurate?
I'd say that's a fair characterization.
Well, given the knowledge and experience of those in that room, frankly, I'm quite happy to defer to that knowledge base more so than what a SPSS algorithm is going to provide for me. And so then what you began to describe was as a way to organize your journey archetypes, Through additional research, you explored several different dimensions. And I'm going to go through them just real quickly, and then you can comment. But just, you know, for the audience's benefit, you looked at involvement from low to high. You looked at, you know, buying versus browsing, entertainment versus purchase, self versus socially driven, hedonic versus utilitarian, affective versus rational, goal versus non-goal oriented, price sensitivity, either low or high, time pressure, either low or high, whether it was necessary versus discretionary, and whether it was intrinsically or extrinsically motivated. And so these were the different dimensions that you were talking about in your mapping exercise. Yeah. And that allowed you to kind of take these 12 archetypes and build upon them kind of this layered understanding of the underlying motivations. And so what was the benefit of doing the mapping? What did you learn from that?
That's a great question. What we learned from it, I remember hearkening back to, you know, 2016, we were thinking of these different dimensions, and I was like, oh, there are all these different ones, but let's come up with two. And then we just kind of eyeballed a map of where these, definitely a perceptual map based on the perceptions of the people in the room with no data, right, of where these different archetypes might fall. We weren't really happy with that. We said, we need to go out and talk to some, you know, to some shoppers and see how, what they think of these. Right. And so we wanted to get a sense of where do these archetypes fall on this sort of a, you know, relative distance from each other in terms of these dimensions. And then how are the dimensions correlated with each other? That's what's nice. I've always liked perceptual maps because I can, you know, I don't have to guess what dimensions are correlated with each other. I let the data tell me.
Yeah.
And so we got that from this map, and then we also can kind of see some interesting relationships. So, for example, we see, you know, I'm looking at the map here. I don't know if you have the latest one, but it's a gifting is high on time pressure compared to, you know, retail therapy is kind of in the lower right hand quadrant. It's just the opposite.
Right.
And gifting's higher on involvement. Higher on price sensitivity, retail therapy, you know, not so much on either of those. Impulsive, right. Same thing. So, and so you look at these and say, okay, it also gives you a sense of whether this thing, these archetypes have any face validity. Does it kind of make sense when I look at these?
And yeah.
I mean, to me, when we got these results, this makes sense, you know, that learning and impulsive would be closer to each other than they are to, say, gifting or joint purchasing or social network driven stuff.
Right, right.
Purchase.
So we can help people kind of wrap their minds around these archetypes. Let's not go through all of them, but let's just touch on a couple and maybe you can describe them. So, for example, the classic was, I think, the highest incident journey type. You guys called it the classic. Tell us about the classic journey.
Well, the classic journey to us, I mean, the way we tried to describe it, because we gave respondents or participants in our study a brief description of what that journey looks like. And a classic to us maps onto the, you know, the McKinsey. Kind of start from knowing very little about the category, and then let's ramp up and do consideration sets and search and evaluation and drilling down to purchase. And then post-purchase evaluation, kind of the classic, and take them all the way around the circle sort of thing.
Okay. So clearly that does exist, but that's only one of the 12. You had another one, which was you called the required journey.
Required means, you know, I've got a, you know, I have to buy a new faucet because my other one went out. So I've got to go do it. And so now I've got to get this done. And so the need is very immediate. The price sensitivity is going to drive me. So I'm not as price sensitive as I would be if I'd planned ahead. And so I've kind of got this, you know, the urgency to a required sort of a journey. Or it could be required that I need milk, right? So it could be habitual as well. So
sure.
I don't have as much latitude on those types of journeys. I've got to get it done quickly.
And so those two, I think, are, you know, in line with the way people think about shopping trips. But one of your principles was that not all journeys are motivated by a purchase. So, like, my favorite, for example, was the retail therapy journey. Can you tell us about the retail therapy journey?
Sure. Well, I mean, people might want to take a break and just go on the car website and Edmunds.com or go on to Amazon and just kind of browse around, go to cosmetic sites, watch some cosmetics blogs or vlogs on YouTube. Not necessarily planning on buying anything, mm-hmm. just kind of using that as almost kind of retail entertainment, right? It's a break.
Yeah.
And learning what's out there.
And I thought it was interesting. It's it sounds like it was more than a break. It was really the offsetting of a negative emotion, right? So I feel bad. I need therapy, and so I participate in those activities to get that therapy.
Exactly.
Yeah, really yep. interesting. You talked in the paper about why the several reasons these traditional models were not really relevant in today's world, and you talk about four emergent changes. There was, consumer knowledge, there was advances in technology, there was product availability, and there's also just recognition that people are busier today. And so one of the journeys, which you call the outsourced journey, and in fact mentioned that we can expect this one to grow in importance, is really the result of those busy lifestyles. Can you tell us about the outsource journey and why you expect that to grow?
Sure. Well, no, you did a great job of teeing that up, actually. Some people are just too busy, and it's not that important of a decision to you, perhaps. It is an important decision, and you just don't feel like you have the expertise and the time to gather that expertise. You outsource it to somebody else. So, kind of like we hear about the bots, right? There's going to be shopper bots.
Yeah.
They already exist, but they're going to get more and more sophisticated. And so to the extent that we try these bots and they do a decent job of matching our needs, then you're going to see more and more people outsourcing their decisions to these bots. Amazon touching on that a little bit, with those dash buttons. You can just push it, and it'll automatically reorder the product for you.
Yeah.
They're outsourcing that to Amazon. So where they want to source that from, and how much you're going to pay, you don't even look at that. It's just automatically done. So
you're
going to see a lot more of that, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that you call this out, and important for marketers to understand. I used to call the delegate of someone else's outsourced journey the proxy shopper.
And same thing. Yes,
yeah,
same.
Yeah.
That's true.
And just to bring that to life a little bit, my wife, has asked me to pick up some things, and of course, several times, and I love shopping. But she and I have very different objectives in mind when it comes to shopping. She'll ask me to pick up some eggs and what she wants, and I know she wants it. She wants free range, omega-3, organic, all of the health benefit type of eggs, which happen to be, three or four times as much in price as, your basic eggs. And of course, I'm going for the basic egg. I want to walk out of there knowing, just how much I saved, relative to what my wife wanted. So, of course, the person who is outsourcing, is often disappointed with what the proxy shopper returns with. But it's important, really, again, as marketers, to recognize that proxy shoppers do have their own objectives, and it's important to understand kind of their approach to shopping and what it means for them, and maybe how to market in store to the proxy shopper who may need a little bit more nudging to bring home what the primary shopper wanted.
Agreed. And there's also a risk to back to these bots. There's a potential incentive to cheat towards a direction that benefits the company or the brand more than the shopper. And the risk there, of course, is that, the shopper says, well, hey, they call foul, and then there goes that opportunity. They decide they better do it themselves. So
right.
You got to evaluate the return versus the risk.
Well, it's interesting. I heard that after the holiday shopping, 30% of online purchases will be returned. obviously because of, you know, gifting doesn't always work out the way you hope it would, but you also have, you know, proxy shopper syndrome, which is generating that activity as well.
Yeah. So I didn't realize it was 30%. I'd heard it was high.
I just heard that recently, and that's alarming. So you, in the paper, you show that multiple journeys can often occur on a single shopping trip. So for example, I may be on the classic trip, but, along my journey, I'm also engaging in entertainment and opportunistic, and even maybe retail therapy, kind of all kind of mixed together.
Yeah, that, I think that's a good point. And one that's easy to lose sight of is that these trips can be nested within each other. So for example, back to your example, going to buy the eggs. So that's an outsourced journey. You're on this outsourced journey. Well, while you're there in the store, you may engage in some retail therapy and flip through some, you know, car magazines for yourself, or you may, you know, engage in a classic journey and look for a particular, you know, item that kind of matches your needs, and your steps match the, you know, the classic McKinsey model. But the key point here is that these journeys don't just happen in isolation. They often happen simultaneously.
Yes. And I think one of the things that maybe as your correspondence, Matt, revealed was that some of these journeys are more closely associated or even negatively associated than others. And so, you know, you can, again, as a marketer, if you understand the relationship between some of these journeys, you can market to them and maybe anticipate that, you know, on one trip, which may be the primary trip for my category, there's likely to be a secondary objective or journey that I may want to market to at the same time.
That's true. And, you know, that's an interesting direction for research, because we just don't know the answer to that question. Is that if a particular, let's say there's a particular type of need that stimulated the journey that got you to the store, does that create some sort of a mindset, right? If I'm in this mindset where that particular archetype is making me, high involvement and price sensitive, well, that may well suppress my tendency to engage in impulse purchases.
Right.
Or maybe it works the other way, and I did make some impulse purchases to kind of, you know, balance things. We don't know how these various shopping mindsets work together on the same trip.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm assuming, I think the answer to this is pretty obvious and intuitive, but that different product categories will lend themselves more or less to certain journey types. You know, like diapers may be more likely to be on a required trip, just for example. Cookies may be more associated with the classic trip, and so on. And I think, you know, each marketer can do their own research to determine, you know, which is which. But when you think about when you think about the portfolio shopping, you know, kind of the total trip, it might be interesting to think not just about your category's journey type, but maybe other categories' journey type that are purchased on the same trip. Because when your category is driving the trip, you may be, let's say, a classic. But when your category is a passenger on some other category's trip, you might be the entertainment.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
That's critical. And what's a little bit different than what we usually think about segmentation, we segment people and they stay in that segment.
Right.
And we may reassess it every once in a while. This is not like that. This is like this trip, you're a classic journey. This next trip, I'm on a routinized journey. And so the shoppers can engage in all different types of archetypes. And so back to your point about understanding your particular category, the key would be to try to understand which of those archetypes are my products most likely to be falling into, and then behave accordingly with my marketing mix.
Did your work go that far? Did you do research to, overlay on your correspondence map different product categories by any chance? It wasn't in the paper. I didn't know whether maybe that was additional analysis you may have done.
No, we did not do that. That would be a great direction for research. And, you know, I'd be happy to, you know, talk to anybody that's interested in doing that. We just, you know, there's so many different types of categories. You almost have to have, you know, specific ones in mind to be the focus of that sort of a empirical study, but it certainly could be done.
Oh my gosh. I that would be incredibly powerful. to be able to do that. So well, thank you, I guess, for offering that invitation. And so the bait's out there for anybody to take. So I want to move on to the discussion section of the paper where you highlight an opportunity to cater to shoppers on journey types that don't always end in a purchase, you know, like the entertainment journey, the learning journey, the social network journeys. And I thought this is really, really just a great point. But I'll ask you, why is doing so important? You know, why would you want to cater to shoppers who are just going to, you know, shop or browse and then walk away and not make a purchase? You know, what's the benefit for retailers or marketers to do that?
I'm glad you called that out too. I think we used the language in the paper. I remember thinking about, you know, how can we talk about why you would do that? And I think it's more of a, I think the language we finally decided to go with was a playing the long game, in that, if I just take a trip, if I'm a retailer or a brand, it's just this, what happens on this trip is all I care about. You know, that's fine, and then I think that's appropriate to a certain extent, but we can't lose sight of the fact that this is, you know, especially if I'm in a commonly, you know, frequently purchased category, I'm going to get another chance.
Right.
I'm not going to be back in the store. And so the long game, I'm laying the groundwork so that when they are on a classic journey that I'm in the choice set. And I may have been able to get into that consideration set or choice set based on efforts I made, you know, a trip or two earlier, or even earlier than that. So it's more of a philosophy. It'd be hard to measure, you know, the short-term, long-term effects.
Right.
But I think in terms of just kind of taking that long view that even if there's not a purchase of my category, I still have a chance to lay some groundwork for my brand in the next time that shopper is in the looking at that particular category.
Yeah, and I think that's marketing strategy at its best. You know, if I recognize that my category the journey to purchase my category may begin with retail therapy. Step one, step two is entertainment, and then step three, you know, might be a social networking journey. Ultimately, that gets the purchase. But knowing that I've got to hold consumers' hands through those stages to successfully convert that sale, rather than just you know hit them with the journey where the sale occurs, I think is really important to understand and a very, very challenging but potentially incredibly effective way of marketing to people.
Exactly.
So you know, we often think about the need to understand shopper behavior as they're standing, you know, in front of our shelf, and we not consider fully the context of what happens before or even after that, you know, when I'm standing in front of the shelf, I am just a sliver within the entire journey. And it's important to understand the kind of the external influences, the technology that they may be using before or even during the shopping, the cognitive behavior states that they may be experiencing, you know, before or during or again, even after. And so, you know, what this work has done is brought just a lot more context to the shopping, number one. And then secondly, just also saying, hey, you know, this isn't linear, and it's not just one objective. There are multiple objectives, you know, and journeys going on. And so, you know, this is complicated stuff, folks. And if you really want to market well to these different journeys, you've got to dig deep and fully understand it. The superficial understanding isn't really going to get you there. And you'll end up just wasting a lot of money and energy, you know, thinking you're doing the right thing, but you're lacking the depth of understanding. And so to that point, you know, if marketers wanted to understand more about the journey types, are there, and you guys do a really, really nice job, giving, you know, profiles of the 12 archetypes, are there deeper, or more comprehensive profiles available beyond what's in the paper?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Well, you know what?
I mean, that rolls up what kind of summarizes our thinking at that point in time. And again, you know, research and understanding and knowledge is like this. This is one step along that road, and we need more research. So back to your earlier point about, you know, understanding that this is these trips are not all created equal, is right. that, you know, the understanding the archetypes that affect my particular product category will help me also identify the touch points.
Right.
So I need to understand, you know, where's the best places along the way to kind of get the right information to the shopper at the right time.
Yes.
And if a step doesn't even get taken, a particular step on that classic journey doesn't even get taken in my category's shopper journey, then I'm wasting my money trying to design in touch points at that point.
Right. Well, yeah. Let me just you know, to build upon my question about is there more comprehensive profiles available? I think first of all, you guys did a fantastic job of giving a nice dense explanation of them in your concise descriptions. So there's really a lot there to begin with. So no one will be disappointed when they read those descriptions. They will walk away understanding really what are the core you know, motivations behind them. Number one, but number two, I also understand that these types of papers are to inspire additional research. And this isn't, you know, intended to be a plug and play. It's intended to say, hey, you know, look, there are principles and ways of thinking about journeys. So begin here and then understand it for your own category. And you know, one of the things that I was wondering as I was reading the paper was, you know, this is wonderful. If there's a way we can, you know, use this as a standard approach to you know, to journeys, then how can I incorporate this into research that I want to do myself? And is there a typing tool I can use in order to segment my survey respondents into one of the 12 archetypes for my category? And I think, you know, the answer is no, because again, these weren't really analytically derived. But at the same time, I think in the appendix of your paper, you've done research where you let consumers self-select which of the journeys they were on, and in fact, they have the opportunity to select more than one. So I think you're really giving marketers and researchers what they would need in order to take this and apply it toward their own businesses.
We tried to do that. That's true, Phil. But if I was in a particular category, I'd probably want to start with this idea in mind that I want to look at these different types of journeys and determine which ones are at play most in my category. And I want to maybe start with some qual and just interview some shoppers.
Right.
And have them say, walk me through a trip, you know, blah, 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 you know, and get a sense of kind of what are the steps they're going through. And then you can follow that up with some quant.
For some listeners, this may be, you know, a relatively new space. You know, they may be obviously aware of that consumers have journeys, right? And it's important to know it, but may not have thought about it, you know, much beyond that. But may now be appreciating, you know, the depth and complexity behind really understanding what is your consumer journey and how do I market effectively to it. Are there any books or articles, Jeff, that come to mind that you might recommend for anyone who wants to learn more about this topic of consumer journeys and the motivations behind them?
That's a great question. You know, actually, the one thing that struck us is there really isn't out there. I mean, you've got the funnel model, and you've got the, you know, the work around the McKinsey model, and then a lot of consultants are out there with their own particular, you know, journey model that they're hyping, but we didn't see any, you know, sources that started with base principles and built up to a journey model like we tried to, and that stimulated this paper. So we're hoping that this can serve as a, you know, like a first step in that direction. I don't know if we're ever going to write a book around it, but you know, I mean, usually I could see that it could be done because you could take these journeys and really flesh them out and do some qual around each one and do some example categories and really flesh this thing out. And there could be a book, but right now, as far as we know, there's books like the why behind the buy sort of thing. But it doesn't get into this at all. So So no, I'd be interested to see if there was one.
Yeah, I agree with you. I haven't seen anything either, and certainly nothing that approaches it systematically. And that's the beauty of this work, is that it helps you to know how to even think about it.
Well, thanks.
Jeff, I think we did a really nice job talking about the main learnings. Is there anything that we didn't talk about? Anything else that we should really cover before we wrap up?
Well, I think we've spent the last 5 or 10 minutes talking about kind of what's next and how would I put this into action.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that if I'm listening to your podcast, I'd be, this is interesting. How do I use this? And so that's why I tried to talk about, do some qualitative and then follow that up with some quantitative like we did, but for the particular product category. But, this is, I think we've covered all the bases that I can think of off the top of my head. How about you?
No, I think you're right. And of course, at the end of the day, everyone wants to know, what can I do about this? And I think we've, helped people maybe think about what to do next. Certainly read the paper and get immersed in this, because, you're just not going to market effectively or efficiently if you don't know the journey that your consumers are on when buying your brand and category. Secondly, I think you've given some great advice about, from a research standpoint, doing the qualitative, followed up by quantitative, and how to approach it that way. And then thirdly, you've opened a door for people to reach out to you and maybe work more in depth on and taking this to the next step. If people did want to reach you, Jeff, what's the best way for them to do so?
Well, they can just email me, JINMAN@PITT, PITT.edu.
Terrific. And so, hopefully someone will take you up on your offer. But besides that, I'm interested, because you're always working on really, really cool stuff. What are you working on or plan to work on that we can look forward to? Anything shopper related?
One thing in particular, I'm working with a online ticket reseller to kind of map out the shopper journey in that space, in a digital space, because a lot of online sessions don't end in a purchase. And so we're trying to figure out what are some of the sticking steps in the digital space on the search side that may be problematic in terms of not leading to a purchase.
That's terrific.
Yeah, so stay tuned. Maybe we can do a podcast on the digital journey one day.
Oh, by all means. Absolutely. Well, we'll absolutely look forward to that. But for now, thanks so much, Jeff, for your time and for your work. I've really enjoyed reconnecting with you and getting the inside scoop on this paper. And thank you just really for all of your insights and understanding over the years about consumers and shoppers. Personally, you've been a major influence on how I've come to understand shoppers and shopping. So really, thank you very, very much. And best of luck in your new role as editor-in-chief for the Journal of Consumer Research.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure talking to you, Phil. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, as well, Jeff. Take care.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I'd like to give a special thanks to Decision Breakers for making today's episode possible. We'll see you next time on Shoppernomics.